Sometimes it's kind of tough to look at a clinical research report and sort of figure out what that's going to mean in practice. But one of the things that I noticed was the work that you've reported saying that after a year, these patients are kind of similar to the group who had systemic therapy. Is that really the case? What you see clinically, it takes about a year, and literally that you really don't see much of a difference at that point?
With the GOG-172 trial, we did formal quality of life assessment with that. And what we saw, unfortunately, it wasn't a stratification variable, so the groups weren't completely equal. And in fact, the IP group actually had a little bit worse quality of life starting out. But their quality of life, if you look at the midpoint of chemo, was slightly lower than it was when they started. The IV group, it was slightly higher than when they started. Both groups actually were better at the end of the 6 cycles of chemotherapy than they were at the beginning. And by 12 months after chemotherapy, they were equivalent. And that goes along with the toxicities that we saw, which was that, at least with the regimen that we used, there was more toxicity. So the during treatment quality of life was affected by that. There's no question about that. But that at the end of therapy, the quality of life had improved as a median for the patients, both on the IV and the IP arm. And at 12 months later, it was equivalent for both groups.
What do you see, not just from the trials, but from your own clinical experience in terms of hospitalizations as a result of treatment and major complications?
I do think that certainly with regard to intraperitoneal therapy, that the complication rate, particularly related to the catheters, is proportional to the comfort of the surgeon and the staff in terms of managing catheter toxicities. I really can't remember the last time we've had to hospitalize one of our patients for just a catheter-related toxicity. That's pretty unusual these days.
For practical purposes, what are some of the problems that you run into, and what are some of the things that are affecting their quality of life?
You know, I think that certainly if in looking at our regimen, the GI toxicity and the cumulative neurotoxicity are both issues. You know, when we did this study, we didn't have some of the newer generation antiemetics. We didn't have, you know, prolonged growth factors. And our nursing group has actually sort of put data together from our patients that we treated, basically using exactly the same regimen. And with the use of contemporary antiemetics and contemporary growth factor support, we can get 80%+ of patients through 6 cycles of therapy. And we're not doing a lot of selection. I mean, some of these are pretty sick patients when they start, but I think just the changes that have come in supportive care over the last 5 to 10 years really make it easier for patients to get through that regimen.
Now, you mentioned that in the trial that's going to look at IP therapy plus bevacizumab, you're delaying the bevacizumab a little bit to allow more wound healing. What, in fact, has been seen in terms of wound healing and bev and ovarian cancer?
In all honesty, I think it's a little bit more of a theoretical concern than it has been an actual concern. I'm not aware of any data that there's like an increased dehiscence rate. And, you know, obviously that would be issues in the colon cancer as well, patients in the adjuvant setting. I think it's just that whole concept that these are people who've had a major abdominal surgery. They have healing going on in the abdominal wall. And if you interfere with vasculature, you might interfere with that. So, but again, to the best of my knowledge, certainly in ovarian cancer, I don't think we've seen anything from the small amount of data that we have in bevacizumab immediately post-operatively that there's been anything that's of concern. I think the colon cancer literature is probably going to give us more information about that right now.